Welcome to Steppin' Out, the 12-step meeting on the air. Tonight you'll meet real people with true stories of addiction and recovery. And now, Steppin' Out.
Hello and welcome to America's 12-step radio show. My name is Drew and this is Steppin' Out. The stories you're about to hear are real. It's a 12-step meeting on the air. So kick back, grab a cup of coffee, and listen in. We have our friends from Alcoholics Anonymous here to share their experience, strength, and hope. And we have something of a unique situation. We have twin brothers in recovery who are here to share their very special story with us tonight. And they are Z and T. And Z, what's up, man? How you doing?
Oh, everything is fantastic.
Tell us a little bit about what it was like and maybe a little bit about what it's like now. And T, you could jump in if you so desire, okay?
Okay,
let us know
great.
How you saw it.
Okay.
All
okay,
right.
Well, you know, let's see if I can begin at the beginning, right?
Yeah.
I think the beginning is goes too far back. It's probably my mother's womb when she first took a drink, but I think I'm kind of fast forward.
All right.
Okay. I think that the thing that I remember most is in my recovery, or moving towards my recovery, reaching my bottom. I think I'd rather touch reaching my bottom because I remember that very, very clearly. It was horrible. I was going into the last days. I've sold everything. My life was miserable. I was just living to go back and forth to a drink and to drugs. It was horrible. I had, as I said, I sold everything. I had met my, you know, the end. And I ran into a friend, an old friend of mine's. He was a judge. And of course, back in the day, we partied together. We did a lot of things mm-hmm. because I'm in the music business, as I told you, as I mentioned earlier.
Okay.
And he was definitely, even though he was a judge, he partied. He was also my lawyer in the earlier days. And I happened to run into him on 14th Street. I was coming from a meeting and I ran into him, and the only thing in my mind was, what can I get from him? Because everything in my life at this point had resorted to, what can I get? What can I sell?
Right.
There was nothing else. And so even when I seen people, that's how I related to him. Oh, who is he? What can I get?
Yeah.
What does he have?
What's in it for me?
What's
mm-hmm.
in it for me? Exactly. My life had really, I was like, it was the pits. And I remember seeing him, and he looked a little different. I wasn't able to relate to him like I normally related to, because we used to get high together.
Right.
He's one of my get high partners. You know, I'll never forget there was times when I would go into his office, and we closed the door, and you know, as I said, he's my lawyer. We'd start talking about one thing, and next thing I know, he'd open up his drawer and he'd pull out this bottle, and he pull out some cocaine, and we just you know, totally get high, and don't, you know, to hell with business, to hell with anything else.
Yeah, sure.
So when I seen him, of course, this was the first thing that came to my mind, you know, like, oh, wow, there's a possibility here. This could be a high, you know? And so, hi, judge, you know?
How you doing?
Hi, how are you doing? And I noticed that there was this kind of like apprehension in his face, you know? It was like, oh, yeah, he's still doing it,
yeah.
You know? And I said to him, you know, oh, come on over to the house. I live not too far from here. Would you come on? As a matter of fact, you know, we haven't seen my brother. My brother's over at the house.
Right.
And, you know, of course, my whole thing was to get him in the house. I know he's got something.
Yeah. And let us both team him.
Yeah. I can double team him. You know, nothing like the double team.
Okay.
Nothing like the double team. You know what I mean? I had a mentor that used to tell us, and you know, this is slightly off, but he used to say, as we were growing up, he used to say, every time I would see him by myself, he'd say, what are you doing here by yourself? And I said, what do you mean? What do you mean? Where's your brother? I'd say, well, he's home. Go back and get him. You're just half a man without him. You know, the novelty is gone. So of course I used that when I seen the judge. I said, oh, come on over. My brother's over there. And,
yeah.
You know, we both can get you. You
all
know.
Right.
So he comes over to the house. He comes over. There's my brother. My house is looking like dingy, dark. You know, it's like stepping in from a beautiful daylight, beautiful sunlight lit
yeah.
day. into this dungeon.
The cave.
Right? The cave.
Yeah. The bat cave, and I'm the bat.
And lurking in the side. Lurking on the side. Anybody else would have been totally frightened walking there, you know? But the judge walks in strong. And then I'm not feeling him. You know, I think we may have had a reef or something and lit up a joint and everything, blowing it all in his face, you know. And he's not biting. He's not taking anything. It's like, damn, excuse me. It's like, you know, what's wrong with the judge? And so,
sober as a judge.
Yeah, sober as a judge. And, yeah. You know, judges aren't sober based on the things that I know. All of a sudden he says to me, he kind of gets kind of irritated.
I guess he got irritated because of the blowing the smoke in
his face. Yeah, the smoke in his face.
Oh, we're doing everything to entice him.
But we're conversating, and I'm telling him how good I'm doing.
Wasn't it obvious?
In his cave.
And he's not biting.
And no, he's not biting. No. You know, normally he would, but he's not biting. And so, I finally decided to just say, "Hey, man, I need some money." And so he looked at me, and all of a sudden he said, "I'm not working with you under these conditions." No, I refuse. Well, first of all, nobody said work with me. I just asked for some money. You understand? What do you mean? Work with me. Come on. You know, I got kind of indignant.
I got indignant.
Like, how dare he? You know, who does he think he is? Yeah. You understand?
Don't he know who we are?
Yes. I'm a big star. But of course my desperation won out, and it said, "Okay, well, what do you want me to do?" Yeah. And so he said, "Look, you meet me at meet me tomorrow at as a matter of fact that evening." He said, "I'll meet you this evening at he gave me this address. Of course, I couldn't relate to the address, and it didn't even matter because I thought I was going to get what I needed to get high for the night. And I wind up going over. My brother and I, we decided, we got in our little old jalopy, and we drove over to this place, and my brother was laying in the back, and
sick.
He said he's laying in sick.
Sick, waiting for him to come back to score. Hurry back. Just
Beavis
go
and Butthead.
Get it.
You're going to score. And so I wind up going up to this room. I'll never forget, it was upstairs, it was on the east side.
Room.
Yeah, went to the upper room, right? and there was the judge winking at me. Hey, I got this sucker, you know? And so he said, "Have a seat. I've just got to go through this meeting, and I'll, you know, after this meeting, everything's going to be all right. What the hell? You know, I don't care. It doesn't matter." So I'm sitting in the room, and all of a sudden I'm hearing all of this stuff, this conversation about this. At first I thought he ratted on me, you know.
Right.
I thought the judge ratted on me. You know, he know I'm getting high, and he told these people, and everybody in here knows, and it's all about me. And I'm kind of like, you know,
paranoid.
But, you know, I'm super paranoid now.
Mm-hmm.
And next thing you know, I kind of calm down and I realize what's really going on. And the reason why I realized, I was at a AA meeting. And the reason why I remember this was an AA meeting, because maybe 2 or 3 years prior, my brother was talking about these meetings, and I used to do everything in my power to discourage my brother from these meetings because I thought I was losing my high partner.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And
let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Did it cross your mind that maybe you were in the right place when you heard that you were at an AA meeting?
Well, you know what? In a way, it did cross my mind because there was certain things that they were saying that was somewhat familiar.
Okay.
And of course, I go back, you know, my life, you know, as I flash back, you know, I could always remember saying to myself when my brother was getting sober initially in the beginning, when I first heard of AA, I always said to myself, wow, what a great place for my father, because my father was an alcoholic.
Oh, okay.
And my father was a very, very good man, especially when he was high.
Okay.
And I think that might have been the beginning of the whole thing. I had my father, who was an alcoholic, and I had an uncle who I admired very much, who was a drug addict. Mm-hmm. And I always had to, I remember being very young, trying to make a decision on who I wanted to be, like my father or my uncle. My father was a blackout drinker, very creative. But in the process, while he's getting high, in the early parts of his getting high, he would tell us stories. He would be very nice. He would take us out. He was really a good person, right. And I'll never forget the smell of his breath. You know, and it was something that I really learned to appreciate because mm-hmm. of the attitude that he carried. And he was a much better man when he was high than when he was sober. Then I had an uncle over there who was a heroin addict, very young, handsome. He used to call him Red. And he had a mentality. Every time he would get high, he'd put his hat on, break his hat down, he'd fix his face, and he was an extremely handsome man. And then he would do this tap dance. You know, that's every time he would. And so it was like, what do I want to be? Do I want to be like Daddy, who black out, or do I want to be Red? So I wind up, I said, okay, I'll go in the middle.
Okay. We're going to aim for the middle on this one, right?
Right, I'll aim for the middle. And I remember never being afraid to experiment with alcohol.
Where does it start for you? How old are you?
I'm now probably 5 years old. I would say five years old because my father would leave the beer cans. He was a blackout drinker, and he would leave the beer cans. He'd fall out, and we grabbed the cans and just start finishing up his drink.
Because all you knew at that age is you're like, your dad's charming and he's fun and he's good to be around, so there's some kind of magic in
that
can.
And this is it.
And it's the can, right?
And it's in the can. It's in the can. And I remember he used to watch fights and had
sports
and watch all kinds of, you know, and had all kinds of friends. I never knew why my mother was upset. I couldn't understand what is wrong with this woman.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, why is she hopping on this man so much just because he brings a few derelicts in the house? You know, so for me to feel free to experiment with alcohol and drugs, you know, it was I was definitely primed for that, and even throughout school, and what happened?
It's sort of like the order of the day.
I mean, I recognize that a young lady here. She reminded me of a situation. I'm the Monsignor. Every time he would pass out, every time I would take Holy Communion, I could smell his breath. I'll never forget one time he said to me. He said, "The Monsignor in my school."
He was giving us our report cards,
mm-hmm. and he came up to me and he started saying, "You pass by the skin of your teeth." And I said, that smells like Daddy. I ain't afraid of you. I know you, you know. So I was really ready for this.
Yeah.
In high school, I remember moving into that. I remember moving into a situation where, you know, I just wasn't afraid. Thunderbird, of my friends, alcohol was easy for me. I adopted to alcohol like a fish to water, you know, and I wasn't afraid of it at all. And so I continued all through high school, and even when I went into the Army, that became the order of the day. Once I reached the Army, and I began to realize that this was something that I needed to calm my nerves down because I was going to Vietnam.
Wow.
And so it was a part of my life. It became a part of my being, my existence, and it was nothing for me to be afraid of, and it was nothing for me to run away from.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, even if you was an alcoholic, no one really called you to task on it. because, you know, as long as you get the job done. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was getting the job done, but it was really doing me in, you know. And so I had become pretty successful in my life, in spite of it all, in spite of myself, mm-hmm. you know.
Functional.
You know, I guess I was functional. And my mother was a music teacher. And her mother was a music teacher. And so this was something that was kind of instilled in me also, music. Mm-hmm. And so I had learned what I needed to do in order to survive. And then I met some people in the music industry that helped me to excel even that much more. Mm. Extremely successful people. And this is in the 60s, so you know what the order of the day was. You
sure.
know, and we carried that on. We
sex,
carried
drugs,
sex,
and
drug,
rock
and
roll.
Rock and roll. And then we was on the top of the charts.
Right.
And so, and so therefore, it was the order of the day. So I had become the poster child. Oh, I probably was with the poster child. I don't think I was quite the poster child, but right. I was certainly with the poster child. You know, of sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Right.
And
but there was nothing wrong with that at the time. So I mean, the society was like completely. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was a different period where that was almost acceptable. Yet that changed over the years. You know, did the party start to get old for you?
I think the party started getting old for us, and I say us because I'm talking about the baby boomers now,
right.
Because I guess that's what I'm considered, even though I feel very young.
Yeah. You never know it, man.
But I think it when we begin to realize that we were killing ourselves, and a lot of us were dying.
Right.
You know, a lot of us were dying, and we wanted to know why. And so I guess we had to really examine what were we doing. Mm-hmm. Here we are. Now we can't get up. A lot of us are totally incapacitated in the inability. Myself, for example, I had owned recording studios. I had owned record companies. I was pretty successful, but I would sell everything. I couldn't hold on to anything. Mm. You know, I had gotten to the point where everything in my life was anything that I would get, it would come into my left hand and it would go out my right hand, you know? And when you are in business with other people, you know, and they're the same way, things are going double fast.
were you a blackout drinker?
No, because that was something that I couldn't do because of my father. It's funny about an alcoholic. When you recognize, you put implants in your head, he's a blackout drinker. I won't be a blackout drinker.
Right.
And you can actually, in your mind, not black out because you get to a point where you actually learn how to control yourself. I always said to myself, he's a blackout drinker. I know how to avoid being a blackout drinker.
Now, I've heard a lot of tall tales while I've been hosting this show for a while, but, you know, what exactly is the, how do you avoid the blackout, okay?
Simple, baby.
All right.
Cocaine.
There it is. All right. That's what I thought you were going to say. All right, yeah, so cocaine.
The new drug, Kate. Oh, that saved everybody.
All right,
you know
cool.
what I'm saying? It made us drink more. We could drink more.
Uh-huh.
And we could stay up longer.
There you go.
You know what I'm saying? I'll never forget the first time I blacked out. I was playing hooky from school, and I was out in Queens, met a young lady, beautiful young lady, and I find myself sitting down talking to her. How would she even want to talk to somebody who was playing hooky from school right now? I don't even know, but apparently she was doing the same thing, and we were sitting on a bench, and I had a bottle of wine, and I'm sitting there probably drunk out of my mind, and all of a sudden, I realized it was raining on me. The girl was gone and the rain.
What happened?
And it was nighttime and I found out I didn't know what was going on because I felt like I wanted to throw up and I'm throwing up profusely and the rain is falling on my head and I'm just totally, and I'm wondering where I'm at, you know, where am I?
Yeah, yeah.
And, I swore to myself, I'll never, ever get like this again.
Yeah.
You know, and I found cocaine.
This drinking thing's all right, except for those pesky blackouts. That's what
exactly.
It is. Yeah. So, all right. So, tell me, what was? I mean, the cocaine was obviously,
that came in.
Kept you
that
going,
came
right?
in. Yeah, when cocaine came in.
You're back from Vietnam at this point?
No, I am. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
As a matter of fact, that's when I got back from Vietnam. When I did get back from Vietnam, I was introduced to cocaine. I was introduced to cocaine by very close members of the family.
Okay.
and I loved it.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. It was just what the doctor ordered.
Mm.
And got involved in the cocaine along with my alcohol. And I thought I had I thought I didn't have an alcohol problem. Well, as a matter of fact, I never thought I had an alcohol problem. While I was sniffing cocaine had ultimately, even that became a problem. And I started needing more of it. I started dealing with freebasing. I started
way back then, huh?
Even, freebasing, I'm kind of moving ahead because after I got out of the Army, I got into the music industry. My brother had set up a situation that was really fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
He had gotten involved with some people who had given us all, helped us to live the best of all lives.
You know,
our drugs, our music, our everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It was all wrapped up in one. And so I spent after I got out of the Army, we were set up in a situation that was extremely apparently successful. But
mm-hmm.
of course, with that success came a lot of the other things, the other perks that came along with it. And that was just more of the same, more of drugs, more of alcohol, more of
insanity.
Yeah. And we, again, I have to reiterate, we were on the top. We had hooked up with the top, and so therefore we had much more than the average person. And so a lot of people that I know in the industry died very, very, at a very young age. And, you know, it's funny about that. When you're an alcoholic and you're a drug addict, you don't even really realize right in front of your face. You don't even realize why people are dying. I recall a situation where I was in a private party where a gentleman came in from Chicago and sat at the table where everybody was getting high, and the man took a blow of cocaine and dropped dead right at the party.
Wow.
And the party kept going.
And they picked him up.
They picked him up, took him out, put him in the hallway.
Somewhere, in a basement.
Yeah, someplace, just left the body, and the party continued. That's the insanity.
The insanity of the whole thing is that what you would think that people would stop and say, wait a minute, what is this that he's doing?
Seemed like everybody said, wow,
I want that.
That's the one I want.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, you're talking about pure insanity, you know? Yeah. And so that's how things had gotten. It had resorted to that type of madness.
Did this scare you at all? I mean, were you getting any kind of sense of, this isn't normal?
It's hard for an abnormal person to think what is normal
right.
or not.
Well, your environment's obviously sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So,
right.
I mean, you know, it's all your frame
that
of reference.
That was normal.
That's normal. But when people are dropping dead in front of you and, you know, people...
They lost out.
That was just...
That's the mentality.
They don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, what they were... It's a, you know...
Amateurs?
If you will.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, wow, glad it was him.
Yeah, better him than
me. You know, better him than me.
Right.
So it's just pure
really,
selfish. It's a pure selfish, but probably deep in your heart. Deep
in your
heart. Deep in your
conscience. Because you have morals. You have these scruples.
You remember morals someplace. You remember the guy telling you about you blew by the skin of your teeth and stuff. You remember morals.
Monsignor.
You remember Monsignor. That was the root of your morals.
Right. I got you.
So, But yes, there was somewhere in the back of your head you remembered something or another, and you remember life.
But the addiction is stronger
than you're just blind,
right?
Yeah, you're blind. You're sick. You're insane.
Mm-hmm. You're insane.
Right.
And so it got to the point where, and the irony of it is, success followed that. You know, you would think that that meant automatic failure, you know, when it comes to monetary success, but it didn't mean automatic failure. And maybe if it did, I might have reached the bottom
quicker,
but it didn't.
You could have been killed by your own success.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know,
right.
I opened up several businesses And I closed up several businesses. Uh-huh. And
open them up again.
And open them up again. Yeah. And close them up again. And the reason why they were closed was because I would, you know, I can't remember wanting anything to stay fixed. Mm. I wasn't stable, so nothing could be stable. Everything had to go. Everything had to go. And I think probably subconsciously I knew that within myself, something within my own self had to go. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know what, or was I prepared to face it. I didn't know how to face it. I didn't know how to deal with it. So everything around me had to go. And that was my family. That was my friends. That was my businesses. Everything had to go. See, but you didn't realize that it was something that...
So it was always people, places, and things. It was never you.
It was never you.
It was never you.
It's never you. And so you got rid of people. You got rid of places. You got rid of things.
Okay.
You know? That happened. That happened for till I, you know, I guess I remember my bottom, what my bottom was, and my bottom probably was not as deep as others. You know, they're various. Each one of us reach what we consider our bottom, what we can take. This leads me all the way back to the judge again. Right. I don't know if I'm moving so fast, but there's so many things. But, you know, I find myself back in that dark, dingy room. You know, and my only companion was my brother, if he was a companion.
Right.
You know what I mean? I wrote a story one time and I called it Will and Evil. My companion was Will and Evil. Mm. You know, if I willed an evil, it would come, you know, and that's what happened. And so
everything was gone for you at that
everything
point?
Was gone, and still I could manifest drugs.
Yeah.
I could still manifest a drink. I remember... I was the type of drinker that would go. I loved to hide. I even had a girlfriend for a while, and she was so pristine. She was so clean. She was so, you know, she was everything that I wasn't. Mm. And she knew nothing about alcohol. She was from Africa. She knew nothing about drugs. She knew nothing about that. She was perfect for me. And I was, I remember I would go, but I couldn't hang out with her because I didn't want her to know that side of me. I didn't want her to know the hide, you know. And so every time I would come in, I'd be Dr. Jekyll.
Jekyll's
and,
okay.
You know, Jekyll's cool, you know, and Hyde would go out at night and go out and I would go to clubs in the I had a ritual. My ritual was go out 12 o'clock, drink all I can. 1 o'clock, smoke all I can, you know. Uh-huh. And then 12 before 3 o'clock, go back and drink, and then come back, air my clothes out, because I would put my clothes out and I would stay another 2 hours just airing my clothes, so when I see her, she wouldn't smell this smoke and alcohol and drugs on me.
Wow. What happened?
One time she actually hunted me down and found me in a bar.
Okay.
Way in the back. I couldn't believe it. I had no idea, you know, to see her there she was. And she lured me into admitting that I was an alcoholic and that I was a drug addict, and she made me feel as though it's comfortable, it's okay, don't worry about it. And then I said, oh darling, come on, get high with me. She said, oh, she lied to me. She made me think that she was understanding, and really and truly, you know, she wasn't down with the program.
Yeah, she was out of
and,
it.
And there, so I had to get rid of her. Yeah. And I think I found myself. I found myself, and to be honest with you, a very, very good person. And that was another one of the gems that I lost in my life.
Right.
You know, one of the many gems that I lost in my life. But ultimately, it all led back to the dark room.
Back to the cave.
Back to the cave. It
back
was
to the
back,
cave.
Back to the back cave.
Okay.
You know? And so there I was. You know, that was where I spent all of my time. You know, after selling everything, after leaving everybody leaving me after my life being everything, you know, was at the bottom.
And this is when you run back into that judge on the street who brought you to that meeting of AA, right?
Brought me to my first AA
meeting. And you guys thought you were going to cop. That's the beauty of this thing.
Like, remember, I'm downstairs waiting. I'm in the car waiting for him to come down. It's half an hour already.
Well, you're thinking he's going up to get some money and get some...
He's
going to
come down, or either come down with the judge, anything. I'll help you. Just
time to go. On, let's go. Time to go.
Right.
You know? And so he comes down.
Uh-huh.
He finally asks,
let me tell you about what was up first.
All right.
I met the speaker. The speaker was incredible. He was incredible. Like I told you, it was. But when it dawned on me that he wasn't talking about me, you know, he was talking about himself. When it dawned on me, I was kind of suspicious at first, you know, with raised eyebrow, you know, wait a minute, the judge ratted on me,
as
I said. But then I heard the way this guy talked, and I said, no, well, there's similarities here, but no, definitely not me. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
He's worse than me.
I'm not that bad. Yeah, no, that guy's an alcoholic.
Yeah, that guy's an alcoholic.
But I began to relate. I began to relax, and I began to relate, and I said, wow.
You knew you were in the right place, didn't you?
This place. You mean everybody's like this? You know, I looked around, and it didn't appear that these people, because they looked clean. They looked good. They looked happy. They looked serene. They had this thing about them that, you know, and I remember seeing people saying, I'm here for... You know, raise your hand if you're a newcomer. And I don't even think I raised my hand, but I was watching people raise their hand, and I was, you know, seeing people get honest. There was this honesty. And remember, I was there. I wasn't honest.
Right.
I was there for a purpose, and that was to get the money from the judge. And so there was no honesty in me at that moment. And I started to feel bad. And the guy... Whatever he said, it touched my heart.
Deep down inside, you did know you were in the right place, though.
I knew I was in the
right
place.
You knew you were in the right place.
I began to wonder. I still didn't put two and two together, though, that the judge intentionally, you know,
set me up
to come here for this particular reason, not for the money.
Right, right.
I'm still wondering, am I going to get the money?
I get the money at the end of the meeting. Is that how this thing goes? Do I see you long enough?
Exactly.
The collection.
Is
everybody going to give me money? What's happening here? I'll never forget the money passing by, too. You know,
there goes my money.
But hold on, is it going to be for me? You know, do the money stop here? You know,
after the meeting.
It was good. And then he introduced me to the speaker. It turned out that the speaker was also the judge's sponsor.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the speaker told the judge had spoke to his sponsor, and told him about me and told him about my brother. And that was, and all this was pre.
They had a seat dusted off for you, didn't they?
They had a seat dusted off for me. Right. I it never dawned on me that one of the seats was empty. That was for him. He just never got up there.
Now he's still down in the car,
he's
right?
Still in the car.
Now the meeting adjourns and they all come downstairs.
Right.
And I'm in the car laying down, just waiting.
You got it.
I'm in the car, laying down, waiting for
very
him
visual
to come.
People. That's visual, right. Visual people. We're gonna do this.
And I open my eye, and there's my brother, but about three or four people with him. All these people looking like the judge now. And they all look serene.
Sober as a judge.
And I'm saying, what did you do, Targa? What are you doing? You know, to me. I'm waiting to get. So I'm really upset. And the speaker, the guy who spoke, who later on became my sponsor also, he was the judge's sponsor, he said, wow, look at you. You're dangerously close to an AA meeting.
Wow.
Right.
And when he said that, it really touched me because I had slipped 2 years ago. I had slipped because I went to a few AA meetings, but I went to the AA meetings and I stayed sober for 2 years.
Right.
But I was I was there for the wrong reasons, you know, but it was still powerful enough to keep me, you know, sober for 2 years.
Right.
So when I noticed my brother and then was standing there, and when the guy said, "You're dangerously close to an AA meeting," all of a sudden, all of the fog and all of the, it just seemed like it penetrated something 2 years ago. And where I remember seeing this, having this serenity, I remember, though I didn't really do the meeting properly, I didn't do the program properly, but there was a lot that I learned there.
Let me ask you guys, you're still doing the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but no drugs. Right,
no drugs. And
what's
and,
that like now?
It's great.
I find it excellent. As a matter of fact, you know, in the industry, the irony about it is the industry is begging for it. The entertainment industry is going through major changes. The major changes that the industry is going is not just through technology,
because
but it's a spiritual change that's going through the industry as well. And I think that people like myself, we become mentors. We become, for a lot of the young people, and they're looking for mentors. They're looking for guidance. Mm. They're looking for the right way.
Oh, and another thing that we have to keep in mind, because during the time when we used to go into recording sessions, the whole thing was about drugs and alcohol. You know, our recording sessions was filled with alcohol and drugs.
Productivity was very low.
Yeah,
right. Now, when we go into recording studios, you see juice. We have juice. We have all kinds. I mean, it's like an oxygen tank you're walking into.
Yeah, right.
There was just recently we had a recording session, and we had it was a great session. But some guys from the next door session came into our session, and they said, "Wow, what's going on in here?
We can breathe.
We went into their room, and it was cigarettes. It was like the worst atmosphere, but it was an atmosphere that we were really used to.
Right. You
so
know
things
it.
Are now yeah. people are
it's
beginning
shifting.
This yeah, shifting a little. You know, people like ourselves are there, and there are people.
And a lot of other people that went through what we went through that lost friends and lost
family to this disease. You know, the people are looking for change now.
So in the industry, I think that we right now, as a matter of fact, we have an organization it's called Hip Hop for Humanity. You probably can, well, you can reach it by hiphopforhumanity.com.
Okay.
Or org.
Okay.
Right. And Hip Hop for Humanity, some of our programs, we offer programs to musicians and athletes. We have a program called the MAAT, MOT, which is Musicians and Athletes Accelerated Training. And we teach kids.
Conflict resolutions.
Yeah. You know, how to deal with the industry,
the pressures
of the industry, and so on and so forth.
Dealing with drugs,
without
succumbing to some of the things that are presented to them.
Sure.
Alcohol and drugs.
How to live. In the industry without allowing these things and these pressures, how to live life on life's terms.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Well, I want to thank you both very, very much for sharing your experience with us tonight. One more time, what was that website address?
The website is hiphopforhumanity.org.
Okay.
Or com.
Cool. Thanks so much for joining us today. And if you want to find out a little bit more about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can visit them online at www.alcoholicsanonymous.org, or you can connect with us here at the show at steppingoutradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Once again, my name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out.